high anxiety whenever you're near. High anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly, it's crashed before. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar once more.
Welcome to Between the Covers, a weekly KBOO program all about books and the people who write them. I'm your host this week, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guest is Courtney Hameister, Portland-based author of the new book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went From Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things, in conversation with Gigi Little, editor of City of Weird, 30 Otherworldly Portland Tales. In Okay, Fine, Whatever, Courtney chronicles the year she spent fighting back against her debilitating anxieties by doing things that scared her. Such things as booking a session with a professional cuddler, spending an afternoon in a sensory deprivation tank, getting high on pot in the middle of a workday, taking classes in fellatio and water aerobics, and those were two separate classes, by the way, partaking of a sex club and its build-your-own burrito bar, and going on a series of first dates, lots and lots of first dates. Courtney was the host, head writer, and co-producer for Livewire, a nationally syndicated public radio variety show based in Portland, and her work has appeared in McSweeney's, Portland Monthly, Oregon Humanities Magazine, the web series The Benefits of Gusbandry, and APM's Marketplace. In addition to editing City of Weird, Gigi has published essays and short fiction in anthologies and literary magazines, including Portland Noir, Spent, and the Pacific Northwest Reader. She works as a marketing coordinator at Powell's Books and also as the graphic designer for Portland publisher Forest Avenue Press. Let's join Courtney and Gigi as they talk about Courtney's new book, Writing, Radio, Humor, Bravery, Romance, and Anxiety.
You said in your book that you thought being the host of Livewire Radio was maybe the best job in Portland.
I think so, yeah.
And so I realized that right now I have the best job in Portland because I get to talk to you and hear you talk about how you do very cool creative things.
Yes.
And it's also, you're right. I'm very anxious right now.
Yes.
And it made me wonder, why is it that all the best things, the quote unquote best things, cause us anxiety?
Well, I spent some time teaching kids through writers in the schools, through literary arts.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I had the great honor of going into Portland and Gresham High Schools and teaching high school seniors and juniors. And one of the things that I tried to tell them was, if you're not anxious, you're not doing anything interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason that we get anxiety is because we are emotionally invested. It means something to us, right? And so in some ways, like I had this friend, my friend Mark Aceto, who's a writer, and he said he actually loves jealousy because and envy because it points him toward what he wants in his life, right?
Yeah.
And I think that anxiety in some ways, we could look at anxiety as doing us somewhat of a favor, right? Because suddenly if you see it show up on you, you can say, oh, I really care about this. This is something that means something to me, right? It's like that, you know, people talk about jitters when they fall when they're falling in love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's because you really care about what this
oh,
you
yeah.
get nervous when you're around them because they matter to you and you think that there's possibility and potential in that. And so and I think that in the book I also say that in some ways we're kind of lucky, people who have anxiety, because when you're afraid of everything, everything is kind of an adventure. Right. Yeah, exactly. And I think that in some ways, yeah, you're not lucky if you're a person who have anxiety. It's difficult. But I think that's why the things that really mean something to us make us anxious. And I think that, you know, in some ways, it is. It's a little bit of a favor to us because we can have some sort of self-awareness around
that.
Wow.
What was the most anxiety-inducing time you had on Livewire?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it was every week. Every week I had anxiety. Yeah. The worst time was when we brought on a vintner, and he had this great champagne. And so we brought him on around the holidays because we wanted to talk to people about champagne and, you know, the different kinds and just talk to us about why do we celebrate with champagne? Questions like that. Yeah. And you do a pre-interview and you kind of talk to people about what you're going to talk about. So I did that with him. And he came on the show, and for whatever reason, he did not want to talk about champagne. And he talked about everything else. He talked about love and science and physics and all this stuff, to the point where it turned into a thing where the audience, I was sort of flabbergasted, and the audience was flabbergasted with me. And every time I would ask a question he wouldn't answer it, the audience would burst into laughter. You know, it's like, oh my God, he's doing it again. He's not answering again. And then he sabered a bottle. Have you ever seen someone saber a bottle?
Right. Yeah,
it's where they take a knife and they throw it up a bottle of champagne, and somehow by pushing it up the bottle, they can knock off the entire top of the bottle, including the glass and the cork. And he did that, and it actually hit someone. And I just sat there thinking, I wish that was me, and they were taking me to the hospital right now, and I wouldn't have to finish this interview because it's miserable. I just was so miserable. But that's the thing. That's the question that I asked myself, right, about the anxiety. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have this anxiety, would I be enjoying this?
Right. Would I be?
Because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Would I? Exactly. I don't know the answer to that question. I feel like there are certain people who would have been loving it.
Yeah.
And I would love to be one of those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about a few of the experiences you had.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I would talk. I thought I'd start with the cuddler.
Sure. Why not talk about the cuddler?
I wanted to hear about that because I will say for me, I just don't like to be touched, I guess, you know? Do you like getting massage?
I do. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I
can't stand it.
Really?
I can't imagine being, yeah.
How do you, I mean, are you okay with someone that you care about touching you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know you. And, you know, I mean, they're going to put their hand on my shoulder or whatever. But, you know, don't rub my back. I don't know. There's something.
I totally get that.
Don't give me a manicure. I don't want to. So, and, you know, to do that with a person, you know, to have a person who, you know, to touch you in kind of an intimate way and they don't love you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird. And so that seemed like one of the things, because as I read your book, there would be those, I'd be weighing myself against your book. Like, I'd probably do that. I'd be able to do that. There's no way I'd do that. I could not do the cuddler, I don't think.
Sure. There's a ton of people who couldn't do the cuddler.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. They say they couldn't do the cuddler, but when my editor sent me the email said, do you want to do this? Do you think you can do this? I immediately said no.
Uh-huh.
But then I thought, oh, I think that I can't do this, so I should do it.
I should do it, yeah.
And I am a person, one of the reasons that I was interested in it was that it turns out that I'm a person who really loves physical affection, mm-hmm. and in fact was a little concerned that I needed it too much,
mm-hmm.
because I hadn't had it for so long.
Yeah.
I was in this relationship with a polyamorous married guy who had been, you know, very honest, and actually his wife was the person who said, let's be polyamorous. And what was amazing about him was he actually was the king of the afterglow. Like, so you would, I was in what was definitely sort of a casual relationship with him,
yeah.
but he would do this thing where he would sort of run his hand up and down my forearm while we were just sort of chatting in the afterglow. Right. And it felt so real and so intimate, mm-hmm. and so like he'd been doing it for years. And that was exactly what I wanted, was
right.
that feeling,
that was it. Yeah.
You know, and I loved it so much. And I so that was part of the reason that I was curious about going to the cuddler, and knowing that he had created this simulacrum of intimacy. Right.
Mm.
This exact feeling that I wanted, but without any of the emotional intimacy. We didn't have anything in common. So I was like, how is he doing this?
Yeah.
And I think that what I discovered when I met Samantha Hess, who is she owns Cuddle Up to Me, which is the cuddling business, my experience of meeting her, and everyone's is different, but I think that there are some people who are more generous than others, say, financially. And what I saw in her and in this guy that I dated was that there are also some people who are physically and emotionally more generous, where they're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt that you're lovable without you actually proving it to them.
Wow.
And they just give you that affection and that love and that caring
yeah.
without really, without you having to show them that you're worthy of that. And
it's a real thing. It
feels real. And it could be that Samantha and this guy are just super good at pretending.
Right.
But that's what it felt like to me. And I think so I went into that experience with Samantha, the cuddler. I met her and she immediately sort of put me at ease based on who she is and how she's just very bubbly and friendly and is just able to put anyone at ease. And then I was massively anxious and felt incredibly awkward in the initial sort of positions that we were in. And she has 56 different cuddling positions, which is amazing to me. But in the initial positions, I was also really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I have to say that in the end, once you sort of settle into it, someone running their fingers through your hair is someone running their fingers through your hair. You know, it's the same thing with a massage.
Yeah.
It feels good kind of when anyone's doing it.
Yeah.
And so, but what I did say about that experience is that it feels to me very poignant. Hmm. If you're a person who doesn't get touched a lot, it feels to me like it's this thing that you've always wanted, while at the same time a reminder that you don't have it.
Right.
And so it just feels difficult. You know, and that's, I think, what my experience was, is when she was doing that, I was like, this is what I want, and I don't have it right now. And so so that was a great, like we were talking about anxiety pointing to us to what means something to us, you know?
Yeah.
It was a great sort of directional, you know, oh, okay. So this, I was having a lot of sexual experiences during that period, and it really helped him to be like, that's really not what I want.
Yes.
I want somebody to hold my hand.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I really wanted. So it was helpful in that way.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. On today's show, our guest is Courtney Hameister, Portland-based author of the new book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went From Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things. In conversation with Gigi Little, editor of City of Weird, 30 Otherworldly Portland Tales.
So let's talk about weed.
Sure, let's do that. it's Oregon.
I thought it was really interesting that you had one of your essays in the book, and one of your experiences that you did in the project was smoking weed at work.
Yes.
And my first thought was, you know, in what way is this anxiety inducing? However, I think that weed does the same thing to me that as it does to you. I think that my body does not do well with it, and the few times that I remember, you know, and I never probably did it till I was like 30 years old or something, you know, kind of thing, and I'm fiercely anxious about smoking, like that just grosses me out, so I've only ever done like edibles, and so those can be dangerous, right? So somebody gave us some candies, and you know, and we were like, my husband and I were watching some you know, show, Sandra Bernhardt. Yeah. We're watching some comedy show, and we were just sitting, you know, back watching, and all of a sudden I was like, and I said to my husband, call 911. And he said, really? I said, no. But I didn't know what to do. You know, it's like, I'm going to be this way for the rest of my life, you know, kind of thing. But
the way that you said that, so... call 911.
Like, it was very...
No one's ever said call 911 that calmly.
In a very calm way. Because I couldn't move at that point. I was like, I'm just stuck. I don't want to move my cheeks right now.
You
know?
Oh my God.
So I really identified with your essay. And so I thought we'd talk about, you know,
yes.
your experience.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, I think that, so what I, so the reason that you You've told me that you're an anxious person.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about weed. I love that weed is legal. I think that if alcohol is legal, then weed should be legal. It's ridiculous. But I will say this. My concern is that there's not a warning on weed. And the warning should be, well, I mean, here's the problem, is that weed does many of the same things to your body that an anxiety attack does to your body. You get tingling in your extremities. You get a rush of adrenaline often. Mm-hmm. You dissociate. All of these things, if they happen to you and you are a person who is prone to panic attacks, you're going to have a freaking panic attack.
Right.
Because part of having an anxiety or a panic attack is that you'll have these symptoms. It happens to people sometimes who run, right? Because then your adrenaline is up. Mm-hmm. Your heart rate goes up.
Yeah.
And the problem with weed and is that it will cause that to happen. And sometimes the only reason that you have a panic attack is because you think you're going to have a panic attack.
Right. Yeah.
And it tells your brain, oh, no. And your brain gets freaked out. Mm-hmm. It then increases those symptoms and it turns into this horrible, unhealthy loop.
The human body is a jerk, right?
Oh, my. The brain is a total jerk.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times has your brain really screwed you?
Oh, always.
And so,
always.
You know, like, you know, it's just like, can you just calm down this one time? Or, you know, like, there's so many ways, but. That's my issue with weed, is that I really wish that there were some sort of warning on it that says, if you are a person who has anxiety or is prone to panic attacks, please consult your physician before trying marijuana.
Yeah.
Because the great, what I will tell people also is, if you have panic attacks, that beta blockers for me as a performer were magical. Beta blockers lower your heart rate. Well, I don't know if they lower your heart rate, but they lower your blood pressure.
Yeah.
And so what they do is they stop that loop, right? Where, oh no, I'm having a panic attack. It goes to your brain. Your brain's like, oh no, a panic attack's happening. But your body, because your symptoms are all quiet, your body goes, no, I'm not. So it just stops the loop, you know?
Yes.
So we, in the book, we decided to smoke weed at work with, you know, permission from our boss and try to write comedy sketches on weed, which is no one has ever in the history of time done that. We were completely original. And then, of course, I ended up having, you know, massive anxiety that I had to hide from all my coworkers.
Yeah,
so
terrible.
It was I'm going to say not recommended. I'm not going to recommend that experience.
I want to say, I want to just like, you know, kind of change the subject slightly from the weed back to the beta blockers, because I took them before I came here.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And part of that goes back to the first time I met you. So I knew who you were, right? I knew about LiveWire and I thought, and I was like enamored of you and stuff. We met at the... periodic, maybe monthly arts event called Share.
Yes.
Right?
Amazing.
Margaret Malone, Kathleen Lane, they run this thing. And
it's one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah. And artists of all sorts come together. They get a prompt. They create for a while. And then they share it, which, oh, my God, you know, there you go. Anxiety, right?
Yep.
And so I was doing it as a writer. And you were there writing. And you started talking about having anxiety, and we were talking about beta blockers because I had just had my first short story published, and I was going to do an event, and I was going to have to read it in public, and I'd never done that before.
Yeah.
And Kathleen said, well, you know, you should take beta blocker, and I'd never heard of them. And you said, oh, I take them. And I was like floored, because I thought, if you have anxiety, you know, and if you deal with anxiety, I can be okay with anxiety. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was huge for me, actually. And it helped me, like, become, like, kind of go forward as a writer and as a person who was doing readings. I did a lot more readings. And it wasn't just beta blockers. It was also knowing that people are out there who seem so with it, so strong and so not anxious. And they're dealing with it, too, you know?
Well, I think that what people who have anxiety forget is how well they hide their own anxiety. And so they think that other people don't have it and they don't realize they're just hiding it as well as I do.
Right?
Because people, you become very good at that. And I think the number of people that I worked at LiveWire for 12 years. I hosted for around a decade. The number of performers that I met, You know, I talked to one musician and I was amazed because he was so he appeared so calm and so easygoing and so comfortable on stage. And he told me that he had anxiety. Right. And I said, that's amazing. I would have never guessed that you had anxiety. And he said, oh, yeah, it's why I'm an alcoholic. Very like casually. Oh, yeah. You know, that's why. And it was amazing to me. And it's the number of people that I met who said that they had some kind of, you know, issue. I think that it's the same as so many aspects of our lives where we walk around thinking everyone else has their together.
Yeah.
And right. Everyone, as my friend Marie says, everyone doesn't have their poop in a group. like nobody does. Everyone is, you know, I heard an interview with Judd Apatow on Mark Maron's show. Mm. And he said, I never feel like I own the moment. I always feel like the giant nerd. Even on my own film sets, I never feel like I have it together.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if he doesn't,
yeah.
who does?
Yeah.
You know, like, and you hear this all the time from people who are at the top of their game. And so I wish that we could all remember this as we're walking around and trying new things.
Yeah.
And just remember that everyone is scared.
Yeah.
And no one thinks they know it all.
Yeah.
They can act like they do, but the people in my experience who claim to know it all are the ones who are the most scared.
Yeah.
You know, like those people who have the most bravado are using that bravado to cover for something.
Right.
And so I just feel like it's sad to me that we just in many ways, how as a culture we hide our vulnerabilities. And, you know, Brene Brown, you know, has been doing this vulnerability work for so many years. And I think it's gendered, the fact that our culture doesn't respect vulnerability because vulnerability is more feminine generally.
Yeah.
And it is to me, you know, I remember I did a graduation speech a few years ago. And one of the things I sort of gave this list, right, of all of these things, very quick pieces of advice. And one of the things that I said was, if you're in a relationship just one time in your life, be the one who loves more. Because and it will make you feel like you're the weak one and you're the vulnerable one, but you're the brave one.
Wow.
Right? Like you're the one who's willing to take the chance to say, I love more. I know that I love you more than you love me, but I'm in it. I'm willing to take that chance. That's the bigger chance, right?
Yeah.
Than being this like stoic person who's not willing to offer yourself up to someone.
Yeah. That's amazing. You mentioned gender, and I had been wanting to talk about that kind of one thing I was thinking about when I was reading your book, and it feels weird to talk about. I actually read an essay about this on KBOO's Bread and Roses once about, and somehow it's easier for me to write an essay and read it and then just sort of come out and say, I spend a lot of time questioning whether it is really true that I'm lesser because I'm a woman, right?
Yeah.
And I think I'm a little obsessed with them. I think it all the time, like in all situations. I'm
really
thinking this thing. I'm always like, you know, yeah, like, you know, I'm getting ready to come today. I'm like, I'm feeling nervous. I shouldn't be nervous. Am I being a woman? And the thing is, it's like weakness you were talking about before. Weakness is, you know, it's associated with anxiety. It's associated with being a woman, you know?
Neuroticism.
Neuroticism.
Yeah, hysteria.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Right. You know, emotion in general, whatever. And I, you know, so I was wondering about that when I was reading your book, because, you know, you are a strong woman, a hilarious woman, and an anxious woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so how do those things come together around being a woman?
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that. It really surprises me that you kind of have this question all the time about being a woman and whether it's so funny because in general, that idea of am I lesser because I'm a woman, in general, it's so ridiculous. Of course
not, right?
But I do think that I sometimes see my neuroticism as feminine and weak,
yeah.
You know? I mean, it's something that, of course, I hate that idea that I do. But there's tons of stuff, you know, that I recognize in the book that makes me a bad feminist. Right. My body issues.
Right.
I felt it was important for me to make clear, oh, well, this is kind of how I felt at the time. And I don't really feel this way anymore when, you know. And that's actually really not true. I still struggle with body issues. There is an aspect of my anxiety that does feel a little bit gendered, but I think that it's less that I think that anxiety is female, mm-hmm. and more that I think that we are as women more able to express our anxiety because men are so socialized to shove everything mm-hmm. down that has anything to do with vulnerability or weakness mm-hmm. or neuroticism or any of that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's just that I'm able to more show it mm-hmm. because I'm a woman. And I guess I should be grateful for that. I mean, I gotta tell you, if I felt all the things that I feel and wasn't allowed to tell the people in my life that I was going through it, yeah. I don't know if I would survive.
Yeah. Right.
As women, I'm so grateful to be a woman yeah. and to mm-hmm. be able to go to my friends and tell them what I'm struggling with
yeah.
and have them empathize with me and yeah. have them hear me yeah. and without trying to fix it and just be with me in that. Like, I think that I'm pretty grateful for.
Yeah, me too. Totally.
And I mean, you know, all the stuff that I've been through, this book has been an unbelievable gift. And yeah. the writing of it was so illuminating for me and was so healing for me. And, you know, I talk about in this class that I teach, I talk about Maria Bamford, who's a comedian who has OCD, intrusive thought, kind of the similar OCD mm-hmm. that I was diagnosed with. And I talk about about the science of comedy and telling jokes, and how when you're in front of a live audience and you make them laugh, it releases endorphins in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear them laughing, it releases endorphins in your body.
Yeah.
And so, and Maria Bamford, when she does comedy, she actually tells jokes about her OCD, which is a devastating disease, very difficult to live with. So she's literally taken her pain
yeah.
and turned it into joy.
Yeah.
Right? Like yeah. she's caused her, you know, these stories about her pain have caused both her and the audience to share these endorphins.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually magical.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like there was struggle and there was difficulty in my story, but it has brought me so much pleasure and joy and connection to people to actually have the book and be able to talk about it with people.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful, which is weird for me. I am almost never grateful. Yeah, it's the pessimist in me.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I really love talking to you today.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Courtney Hameister, Portland-based author of the new book, Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went From Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things, in conversation with Gigi Little, editor of City of Weird, 30 Otherworldly Portland Tales. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Courtney and Gigi for visiting us at KBOO, and to all of you for listening.
Heat change, high anxiety. It's always the same. Hey, anxiety. It's you that I blame. It's very clear to me. I've got to give in. High anxiety. And remember, folks, be good to your parents. They've been good to you. You win.